My name is Scott Green. This is Brian Washam. And today we're going to be talking a little bit about, obviously, missions. This is a missions breakout. So we've been going through some pretty cool stuff this last summer with some of the mission trips that we've been doing. This last summer we went to Honduras. We went to South Africa. We've got some people here today that are going to be talking about those trips. We've also got a long-term missionary family that has been in Thailand. They've just been back for about 4 years now, but they spent about 27 years there. The idea today is really just a kind of a think tank to pick our brains a little bit as far as thoughts that each individual had before they went on the trip. What were some ideas? What were some thoughts? What were some concerns that they had? Different things that they maybe used to plan a little bit about their trip. And then the transition back. We wanted to kind of figure out exactly what that transition looked like, how they became missionaries, either long-term or short-term. And that's pretty much the synopsis of what we're going to be doing today. That's kind of the idea. We're going to have a little bit of time at the end to kind of do a little question and answer. We've got some great people here that have got some really good experience with missions and being in the field and preparing and coming back and what that looks like. And so we want to just kind of give you guys an opportunity at the end here to do a little question and answer. I believe, too, we're going to be transitioning from this to lunch. So that will also be a great opportunity if somebody's talking about a missions trip or something that you'd like to get involved with or that you're interested with, you can go have lunch with them. So let's go ahead and get started. Caitlin and Erica, if you want to come on up, take a seat on the couch.
Well, thank you all for coming here. Caitlin, Erica, just answer. You know, if one of you has something you just want to shoot it off, I'll let you all work out who goes first. The first question. Oh, and both of you went to Honduras. So just to give you an idea where they went, what were your thoughts leading up to the trip? Were you excited? Were you nervous? What was that like?
Well, I would say I was really excited. Yeah, that's how I felt. But right before the trip, actually, I got pretty nervous. It was kind of weird. And I started thinking, like, what if something happens, like I don't come back? Stuff like that. Those are just crazy thoughts. But I got over that. But I was just really excited to see what God was going to teach me and how I was going to be able to work for him over there and just get out of my comfort zone big time.
I was definitely excited. I didn't really know what to expect, but I knew that God was calling me to go into a medical missions trip, and he worked a lot in my life so far. So, yeah, definitely excited, but didn't know what to expect.
The next one's kind of tough because I know that y'all did just a ton of stuff, and we could spend a whole session talking about, you know, each of your individual experiences on the trip. But if you can, give us one sentence each just to explain the type of work that you did while you were over there.
So every day we packed up and went to a different village and set up a medical clinic. And patients would just line up and we would administer medicines. There were dentists and eye doctors and physical therapists and then the evangelist.
Okay, the third question is basically, how were you changed upon arriving home? So what things changed you? How did you change?
Upon arriving home, I pretty much didn't feel like I fit in here. It was really kind of, I don't know, God worked a lot over there just and challenged me in a way to live a much simpler life. Like here, I was like, oh yeah, like you kind of fall into the flow of like society and what you need to survive. And there, we survived on the bare minimum and, you know, kind of challenged me to look at my life and really be like, okay, so what do you need to survive? What is God calling you to be and what to do? And so kind of just really challenged me, still working through all of that. It's a big thing to kind of deal with and figure things out. So still working, but definitely challenged me to live a simpler life.
My roommate told me that she noticed a difference in me. I didn't quite notice it as much, I guess, that she said I just kind of seemed like just a little down. But I didn't think I was that down, but I guess I was. I was just more thoughtful, I guess. I noticed things that used to be more of a big deal to me weren't. Maybe, I don't know, just little things that get in your way of your daily life that you think are a big deal just aren't. And it made me question a lot about what I was doing and if I was going down the right path for my life. And just lots of thinking about how my life is so different here from Honduras and how I have so many things and I don't need most of them. And it was interesting coming back and realizing how distracted most of the people here are by their things and how that affects many, many relationships here.
Okay, and the last question is one that, you know, is kind of the big mystery. There's one that we've really, at The Well, have really been trying to kind of figure out. And that is basically, how do you maintain the momentum once you've come back from your trip? You've obviously felt these different feelings, you've seen different things, and you are changed. How do you continue that momentum, and what does that look like for the both of you? And then the second part of that question is, you know, what do you do if, or what have you done, or what have you thought of in regards to any outlets, if there are any outlets, to get back involved? I believe the question is, what do you do if there doesn't seem to be any outlets? You know, what have you guys thought of, or what is your plan?
Well, my plan is to definitely get involved. I'm currently serving in Kids Connection and absolutely love it there. But, you know, just getting connected through different opportunities that The Well has here. I am actually, after this, going into and hopefully to mentor a kid in the Target neighborhood. So that's what I've done so far, and just kind of connect with people who have gone through the same thing that you have and kind of discuss your feelings.
I would say I worked with the junior hires before going on the trip, and they're definitely a big passion. They still are. And if anything, I think from coming back from the trip, it's made me really want to show these kids how good they have it here and try to connect what they already have to giving to the less fortunate and letting them see that the true gift is in the giving, and that that's where they'll find their meaning, and through that they would be blessing the less fortunate also. So I think since coming back, it's just really motivated me to push and make sure I'm moving towards that, and I don't want to stay the same as I was before the trip. So that has been kind of a challenge, like, where do I go from here? I'm still kind of figuring that out, but I think go in that direction.
Next we will have Dave Lieberman. He went to South Africa, and I'm just going to jump right into the same questions. So what were your thoughts leading up to the trip? You know, were you feeling excited? Were you nervous? What was it like for you?
I don't think I was nervous until right before we took off from Atlanta to go to Africa, but I was definitely just fired up and so excited to go on this adventure and completely just unexpected. I didn't know what to expect, and it was really exciting.
To kind of tag on to that, had you been on a mission trip before? Was this a first for you? What did ministry kind of look like for you beforehand? Was this just, you know, dive right in, or was it kind of a progression for you?
Definitely when I grew up, growing up as a child, my family would go to Mexico once a month. So some of my earliest memories are serving in Tecate, Mexico with my mom and dad, my brother and sister. So that there was a foundation definitely laid. We took a trip when I was 12 to Mexico, deep into the heart of Mexico. So those were definitely some, you know, there's roots of serving in third world countries. But as far as the last, you know, 15 years, this is the first time I'd done anything like this. So just kind of dive right in.
If you can, give me one sentence to explain what y'all did when you were over there.
It's really hard. We did so many different things. I would just say further established relationship and community with a people that just need the truth of Jesus so bad.
How were you changed? You came back, you obviously saw some stuff. How were you changed?
I definitely came back thinking, how could I ever complain about anything again after what I saw? I came back very, very, it was definitely a crash. I came back with a staph infection, so I was definitely sick, and there was a real big letdown from all the things that, you know, I was a part of, and it was so much fun to be on this adventure, and then coming back to America and like the everyday life of going to work and school, and it kind of just seemed boring. So I was definitely down, but it definitely changed me in a way where God's showing me to get the focus off of myself, because the more I think about myself, the more miserable I am, and the more I focus on serving people in need, the more peace and fulfillment I have.
And how have you kept the momentum going since you've been back? And what outlets have you used? And really, you know, what is it that you're doing now to kind of keep that momentum, that energy going?
I was very fortunate to have signed up for the residency program. So that was a real key jump start to get on a daily diving into the word basis with Mike and Brad and other guys. So that's been key for me. I think just really getting back to where my focus is at. In Africa, our focus was serving. It was in the word. It was in prayer. It was in worship. That's what we did all day long. We had community with each other, and it was just awesome. And there's no reason why that would have to stop now coming back, you know, to Fresno. So I'd say to keep it going, just stay connected to the word, stay in prayer, you know, just really, really focus on God and what he's doing and get involved in that.
Is there anything, you know, that you would like to add?
I don't know. I guess just like on that last comment, it's ministry is a lifestyle. It's not something that you go and sign up for a month trip or 2 weeks to Honduras or Africa. It's every day. And that fun, exciting feeling of adventure and purpose can be just as exciting here in Fresno. So,
thank you. Okay, the next person we're going to interview, or the next couple, is the Millers. If you'll come up, please. The Millers have spent 27 years in Thailand. They as they bow to the crowd. I met Sandy. I was forced, absolutely, no. I met Sandy at work. I teach special ed, and Sandy was my instructional aide. I asked Sandy to introduce herself to the kids, and she started whipping Thai on the kids, and I literally stopped what I was doing and was like, what is going on? She started writing it, and just through some conversations, I found out that she was a long-term missionary in Thailand for 27 years, her and her husband. So let's go ahead and get started. Let's just talk about the beginning process. How did you guys get started? What was that process like? What did it look like? What did you guys do to get yourselves at a point where you decided that you were going to go to Thailand? We'll start from there.
We actually were not married when we started this journey. So I'm from Michigan. Somebody will say that accent. I never really think I have one. Not like those guys from Arkansas, at least. I didn't grow up in a Christian background, but I became a believer just before I went to university, and it was there that is the first time I heard about missions, and I confess to you, I only heard about one mission, so that's the one I went with. I mean, nothing like you guys' age. We're kind of old. We're very old, in fact. But what struck me was once I became a believer, that this is the thought the Lord used. If you lived over there, wherever over there was, would somebody bother to come to tell you the message that somebody finally had broken through to me with? So that's how I got into the training. I picked a mission that was going to a place where they had never heard, you know, as far as we knew. Nobody in this particular group of people that we'd be going to heard the gospel, and I just wanted them to hear the message, and that's actually how I came into it. Into the training, that's where I met him.
My background is that I was saved at a fairly young age, and I thank the Lord that my parents both knew the Lord and tried to bring me up in a godly way. And yet, at the time I was growing up, I set my sights on becoming an engineer and getting all the goodies that come along with an engineering degree. And I pretty much aimed for that up until about the age of 20, 21. And at that time, through a set of circumstances, my younger brother went off to a Bible school for a short time, and he would send back tapes of the things that he was learning in class. And I was just really challenged by the messages that I was hearing about the fact that there were people in other parts of the world who'd never heard the gospel even once. And as I was growing up, that was the time when the Peace Corps was being formed, and I had an interest in going overseas and being a help to people, but But this was something a little bit different than that, because it was actually sharing the gospel with people, making a difference in their lives for eternity, you might say. And so I got to the point where I thought, you know, I'm aiming for engineering and all these things, and I knew engineers, and they just didn't seem to be satisfied with the things they were doing. Not that they can't be, I understand, but at that point, it's just the way it appeared to me. And so I said, okay, I've spent a lot of time learning about how to make a living, but let me take a little bit of time to find out how to live. And so I decided to go off to Bible school. And at that time, I was just planning to go for, you know, maybe a year at the most. And while I was there, I was just really getting challenged with that aspect of so many people out there who are on their way to hell, as far as I knew. And it appeared to me that people in the world would, you know, want to accept the gospel if they just had that opportunity to hear it. So I said, okay, God, I'll take one step at a time. You open the doors if that's where you want me to go. And so I continued on, finished the training in the Bible school, and went on to the next phase of training, and that's where I met Sandy, and together the Lord just melded us together and led us to Thailand. It's just kind of like both of us were saying, you know, God, if you want us to go, that's the way we'll go.
The next question is, you know, obviously 27 years, you guys were there for a while. Tell us a little bit about your mission. What exactly were you doing? What experiences you had? I think you guys touched on a couple of things earlier today about just the living aspect and how different it is there than it is here in the United States. So just talk about your mission. Again, we've got plenty of time, so if you want to go into a couple of stories, that's fine, but just let us know exactly what it was your mission was.
The overall mission was church planting. Did we exactly know what that is? Not really, but we had the privilege of going through what we call boot camp, jungle camp, and then language and linguistic school. We knew we'd have to learn an unwritten language. So that meant we had to learn how to make every sound that exists in the world, how to say it, how to write it. And then we could write down what you're saying. To learn stuff monolingually would be a bit tough. We might have to do that. We didn't. So we first had to, we went through that kind of training, so we were well prepared in that venue. But we were, so to do church planks, that's so vague. But what you actually had to do in a nutshell, in more than one sentence, obviously, we had to learn the language and culture of Thailand first. And then we moved up to a tribe, and it was completely different, and they didn't have a written language. So our job was to put their language into writing so we could put it into the scriptures, but also put it into health books and all this other stuff. And then the challenge became trying to get these guys to ever realize, why would they need to read? They hadn't had to read before he got here. Why do we need it now? And so that was a challenge, and a very, very slow work among this tribe. To this day, there's probably 60,000 people in this tribe in Laos and Thailand, and there's probably maybe 30 believers by now. It took about 10 years for the first one, then 2 more years for the second one. Very, very slow going. So that just meant going around and loving you to death, having the Lord try to help us to love you to death when you're doing incredible things to us. When you do language study for something like that, you got to practice it. And so we would go house to house to practice. So for instance, when we got to the first house, we're on stilts. So when you see me looking up, we're on stilts out there. So we'd say, Ching Xianay, Infin Kum Thot Mat, and Jen Ying Bri, I Thun Top, Yu Lil Di Mat. And they're looking at you. And you've just said, whose house is this? I'm new here. I'm studying your language. That's all I can say. Bye now. You know, we are adults, and they're, it's a little bit tough. It was quite tough. But what made it a little bit tougher was, we go to these houses, and pretty soon we have those kids following us, and they're little kids, and they're like, I wanted to say, shut up, kid, those are my lines. But I couldn't say that yet. Probably good. But what happened in that process, we're learning things experientially, and I get to my, and they give me the mortar and pestle parts of that, and these are women. The men were a lot nicer to him. The women weren't. And so they give me the parts of mortar and pestle there, and I'm going around practicing it. So I come to your house, and you know I'm already learning. You got that. I'm going to tell you what I learned today about the mortar and pestle, and I tell you all the parts. And you laugh, but that's what you did every day. That's not new. So I went to 30 houses and practiced my mortar and pestle. I get to my language helper at night, who is a tribal person, but she's also one of the prostitutes. And I had to fight off Thai soldiers every night. They would put things through the wall because they're bamboo walls and go home. They knew those two English words. So I'm in there, and I'm just sitting down with her, and I got the go home people outside, and I'm kind of going like this because these guys would be there every night. And she finally says to me, she's livid. I know she's mad, and I've only just begun to learn her language, and she's screaming at me. So I get the point, you're mad. But I don't know what you're saying. And she's going, da-da-da-da. And finally she threw in some Thai, because we had learned that already to a degree. And she said, what in the blankety-blank-blank have you been going around saying today? And I wanted to say, I give. I don't know. I didn't know how to say that. I said, I told people about what's in the mortar and pestle. She said, you told people, this is a blankety-blank-blank, this is a blankety-blank-blank, this is a private part, this is another private part, for each of the parts you've been saying all day long. Missionary kills tribal person. Wouldn't have looked good in the papers, but I did consider it. I knew the lady who had taught me the parts. I had done it with gusto, guys. That's some of the things. What do you do in those situations? But that's what it's about. You spend time with them. You got to take the ups and downs with them. And then eventually, as the Lord works in hearts, even if it was one at a time in secret, we could share the gospel. And there was a few believers, and it went on from there. Two translating scriptures. It's not quite done yet, but they're well in their way. And then there's little small churches in a couple of places at this point.
Well, I would just say, Scott asked me that about what is daily life like and what is the work like and what is it like to be over there? Well, it should, in many respects, it's much like it is here. I mean, you have your house to repair, you have to go to the market, you have to go to the hospital, but you have relationships with people, and that's what God uses to give you the opportunities to share with them. And so I would go out to the fields with them. I would work on their houses with them. I would go to the hospital with them. You name it, whatever they would allow me to do with them, that's what I did in order to get an opportunity to share the gospel with them.
The next question I'd like to ask is change. Obviously, there's an immense amount of change here. Let's talk about that. What was the process of how you changed? How did your view of the world, how did your walk in your faith change? How did that change happen, and what did it look like?
Okay, well, yeah, you go out to Thailand. I mean, in my case anyway, going out to Thailand, I'd been a believer then for about 20 years, maybe 15 years, and gone to Bible school. I had a lot of things that I had learned about the Word of God and different things I had experienced in walking with Him. And yet going out there and more or less being on my own was a little bit different. And you have to really be careful to spend time in the Word of God and in prayer. If you don't, you're going to just go downhill real quickly, because the enemy's out there to knock you down or to make you ineffective where you're at. And so in the course of all those years that we were out there, some of my ideas about how God works and what He does have changed. I know one of the questions you had was what was it like for you to adjust to being back here in the U.S.? And I was thinking about that. You know, we came back from Thailand. Came back meaning in the sense of retiring from our work out there, because of different things that had developed or situations that had developed. And I came back here thinking, well, I know what God's going to do with my life next because of this and this and this and this. And when I came back, this and this happened, but something else didn't happen. And it was a pretty big letdown for me. And I said, you know, I'm not so sure I know what it is to know what the will of God is. And it kind of knocked me down for a little bit. I mean, in the sense of feeling like, well, I've got it all figured out. I really don't. I have a lot more respect for God's mysteriousness, you might say. But as I spent time in His Word, I could see, you know, His capabilities for adjusting and changing and making situations occur just the way He wants them to in order to accomplish His will is just fathomless. I mean, in that sense, I felt like, okay, all these things did happen, and I took them as meaning that God wanted me to do something. Maybe He did, but it wasn't to the extent that I had thought it would. And so I came away feeling that maybe I don't understand what it is to know the will of God is, so much as I feel a lot more confidence in His ability to lead me and lead Sandy in the directions He wants us to be in order to fulfill His will. And I feel a lot more confidence in that, not in my ability, but in His ability.
How are you changed arriving home? I think it's a little bit different from maybe others' answers from being gone so long. It has been murderous, to be frank with you. We've been home 4 years. The first three were a kill. Now it's a little it's a little more stable. Probably doesn't look like it right now, but you all have grown up in this world of computers and stuff like that. We had running water. We ran and got it. We had lights, you know, and we light it with a match. And then we eventually got electricity, but you never knew when it was going to be on. So you didn't have this internet stuff till our last term. We began to get some of that. In fact, this morning, I learned from your wife-to-be what an iPod is. I'm in the school system, guys, and they get taken away from students, but I never knew what it was. So I said, I'm going to take the jump today. I'm going to say, Sarah, what does it do? So I got a great lesson from her today. You come back stupid. We are just crazy. When we got back after just the first 5 years, our terms were 5 years at first. That's an eternity. I mean, Scott said, I would have just thought you'd just go and you do that because he's a man. It's way different for we women. 5 years, two languages, two cultures, you're the stupidest thing in the world that they've ever seen. And you really kind of are. So to come back to this where you can't keep up with what's going on, and Sarah said, yeah, my parents don't exactly like these things either. And I said, I love your parents, I'm sure. Just because it's so fast, then we've had this great vacuum. So been very difficult to find out, how do you fit in this culture? And I don't really want to. That's part of my problem. We still have a dream, and we're kind of old guys, to go back. Just go back and die. It's really quite okay. And so we have that in our hearts to do that. We'd been gone for 5 years. Explain that with one of the gals here. We'd been gone for that first 5 years. I came home. I took a package to the post office with string around it. He said, you blankety blank blank. This guy just lit into me like a truck. You don't put strings on here. Do you realize that this wrecks our machines? Where in the blankety blank have you been? And I thought, a soft answer turns away wrath. Thailand? That's all I could think. I just couldn't even think, you guys. He's so... And he says, Thailand? I said, yes, sir. And I said, look, we can do this. I could cut off the strings for you if you just have a pair of scissors, because, you know, when you're out there, you can learn to do everything. I could chew it off for you if I have to. And I said, and sir, you and I can be happy that I didn't put wax on this. And he goes, wax? I just wanted to calm him down. But, I mean, it's true. We lived in the Golden Triangle. You had to wax every knot of your package, of every string on your package, before you could send one back in those days, because there were drugs in it. And they had to know that once you sent it in, if they decide to open it up and the wax hadn't been broken, then you put the drugs in it. But if it had been broken, somebody else did. So I just said, sir, we can both be glad I didn't put wax on it. So it's coming from that kind of society for all these years back to ours, that everything should have been done yesterday and it had been better if it was last week. So an extraordinarily tough adjustment and we didn't expect it, but how would we know? We'd never done it before, but it was a surprise.
The next question, and you know, we'll come to a close here. Advice. We've got some people here that have gone on trips. We've got some people that are probably going to want to be long-term missionaries. In fact, Brian is one, and we've got Holly Cannon, who's overseas right now. What's some advice? Steps on getting there, steps on, you know, I think you guys have talked a little bit, staying in contact with people back home. Paint us a picture for what it looks like, what it takes, and how that's going to happen for some of these people that obviously want to go overseas, not only short-term, but want to go long-term.
Well, it's again, knowledge is power. And the more you know about your countries you're going to, the better prepared you'll be about it. You won't be taken so much by surprise if you have up-to-date information about the country, what's going on and what's happening there, the cultures, the language of the people. If you can have some sort of a real good grasp of those things as well as you possibly can, that's a big help. And secondly, as Scott was mentioning, we feel that it's very, very important to have very good prayer support from your home church and a small group of people that you can just bounce ideas off of. Sometimes being out there where you are, you need to just talk to somebody, and not necessarily to be able to say, well, can you solve this? But just, you know, kind of bouncing ideas off of somebody, being able to do that is pretty important. And sometimes having someone you can just confide in, you know, a guy for a guy and a gal for a gal, is sometimes a little bit hard to find a way out there. But having a person you can do that with is really, really important. Financial support, I don't know, we went out there with a lot of promises. Some of them people, you know, came through with money that they said they would, and other people who said they would never did. And while we were out there, we saw God provide through people we've never seen, sometimes through people that passed on, even people who were dead, provided for us. And it's just another way of seeing that God is able.
I can really say ditto to that. Ladies, we're different than men. We tend to, although the men definitely need connections, and I think I saw a lot where the men didn't have that out there. You guys, you do need it. But we women do too. Now we can do that. We can even do that in Thailand. So not every place you'll go, but most places you'll go, you'll at least be able to get somewhere, and they have the internet cafe. They got them in the littlest holes in the world that you've ever seen. So there is a way to communicate, which would be an advantage now that we didn't have, but it's one you want to take up. It's not with a lot of people that you know well, but if you're just hurting today and you hate your job out there, we had those days. It's nice to talk to somebody. It's not really that we wanted to leave. It just was overbearing when you've got people hanging themselves. They're your friends. We tried to get the gospel to them, or even before we could get the gospel to them, they were dying of TB. We were passing out pills like crazy. And we actually did have a church that said, they sent a letter to us, could you please send us a DVD of your work? And we would like it yesterday. That was a tough one, guys. We didn't even get the thing, so we could have got it there yesterday. And I think, do you remember where we live? And we have just been dealing with those kind of things. So that's when you need to just have that friend to say, this church is really off the line right now. I want to kill them. We're not going to do that. But you got that connection on a true heart level. And that we as a church can say, even if you don't have to, like Larry's saying, you don't have to fix us, but we're just as human as you are. What hurts you hurts us. And yet we're in a world of, you haven't a clue. We heard guns go off. We were part of the war out there. Even though the Vietnam War was over, it wasn't over where we were. And we weren't sure it was a different language. We didn't know if they were telling us to run, duck, or come out and hold up your hands. Had no idea. We ducked. You just figure better do that because you don't know what they're saying. There's a lot of stuff that you see and you need to talk about it. Don't keep it in all those years. And it doesn't mean you're not spiritual because you had a tough time with it. Another thing, you're doing it here. You guys are ahead. You're way ahead of a lot of churches. Know your gifts. No, you're not going out there to work in your gifts all the time. But if you can never work in your gifts, it'll kill you. And we have seen people do that if it's not your passion. So therefore, if you're going with the mission, know your mission. Know if they're going to let you work in that gifted area, but not saying, I'm not going to be a servant. That's not what we're talking about. But the very things they're talking about, we didn't have that a lot. And it didn't make the mission or any churches we were with bad. They just didn't know about these kind of things. So know that for yourself. Because, again, if you can't work in your passion at all, it's already hard enough. You got an enemy. Okay, so you're on the right track here. Just do know that. And if you happen to go do what we did with whatever you've heard today, I want you to know it's the most wonderful thing in the world. We'll do it again, even if we're 70, if we can.
Thank you so much for all of your information and experience. All right, let's go ahead and do some question and answer. If the people that spoke... I know the Millers just went and sat down. If you guys could come back up here, and if you guys have questions, if there's some ideas or something that maybe we could bounce around, now would be a great time to do it. We got a couple minutes, so let's go ahead.
The question was, what was support raising like? How did you go about it? Did you work? Did the church help you out? Was it both? Just what did it look like?
Okay, for us... actually,
the early 70s.
Yes, the early 70s. We had been through, both of us been to college, and we had been through training, and neither one of us had really worked more than, I don't know, a couple of months in our lives. And when we finished our training, we contacted a pastor, and I think he had asked us or suggested us that we needed to send out a letter to different churches asking them if they had opportunities or places when we could share with churches, you know. And so we developed some contacts that way, and we also shared with relatives and friends what our aims and goals were, and they in turn had shared with us, you know, opportunities where we could come and perhaps speak in their church or whatever. And we had a lot of people praying about it. We knew to some degree how much money we would need overseas in Thailand. And again, some of the money that we had been promised came through and some of it didn't. But we had enough anyway to purchase our plane ticket over, and I think at that time we took enough money with us for another about a month or two. But we really didn't know, you know, how much God would provide. And some mission boards work differently. There are some mission boards where you're pretty well sure, you know, you're going to have so much money every month. And they even provide for retirement. And in our case, it was just, you know, you needed to save up money.
Some missions will require that you do have so much before you leave this soil. At that time, our mission didn't. We knew what was recommended, but you could really go when you wanted to go. So we had a certain amount, and we'd made a lot of contacts. And again, we had no idea who, say, you're the old people we've known, which church was going to. And it ended out it was people we never thought did and people we thought would didn't. And as time went by and then we came home, to be honest with you, a real help for us when we came home was we'd been in a tribe, and there was something glorious about being in a tribe. And so people wanted to see tribal people.
I was going to say, too, initially, after we finished our training, but before we went to Thailand the very first time, we were able to borrow some slides from somebody who had been there before, and we were able to show people what we were thinking about doing. And we also developed a program between the two of us based on our training, what we'd learned and what we had knew about the language. And so we were able to go into churches and speak in that sense. And usually I was the one who was asked to share a message of some sort. And tell you the truth, I'm not a speaker. I'm not a preacher. I just get nervous as crazy can be when I get up in front of groups, you know. So we came to a point, actually one furlough, and I said, man, if this is going to be the way it's going to be, I just can't take it, you know. So I was ready to cash it in, you might say, and say forget it, because furlough was just such a horrible experience for us. But I don't know, Lord in his graciousness gave us some ideas, and together we developed a program where two of us generally, I mean, up to recently, we would when we would contact a church, we would tell them we'd like to share, but we'd like to share between the two of us. And so we'd go up, and Sandy would share for 5 minutes, and I would share for 5 minutes, and then she'd go back to 5 minutes, and I could do that. And then we'd sing together, and I would work on a sermon. Quite a bit. And after sharing in a church about 10 or 15 times, my knees wouldn't shake so much. I got up there, and I could make it through it okay. But it was just, that's the hardest part for us was furlough. It's just a nightmare. But the Lord, in his goodness, really helped us to be able to, again, share with people, not necessarily big messages, great messages, but sharing with them what it was like for the tribal people looking at eternity without God. And I don't know, that's the ideas he gave us.
So use your gifts. If you guys want to go over there and you have to do this, we've decided, okay, we can't do this. He doesn't like to, it's not his gift. But they weren't going gifts back in our days. It had to become your gift, guys. If it wasn't, it was going to be. We thought, how can we change this? So let's figure out what we can do. So we said to these pastors, we'll bring the tribal group to you. And we brought the people into tribal skits and made them hurt. No, made them feel you could change cultural things with them. And so whatever your mission is, bring that to them. They don't. If you're going for the deaf, they don't know how it works with the deaf. So let's get these guys in your congregation deaf. There's different ways to do it. You don't have to get stuck with, you just have to do preaching. And a lot of times these days, you don't have that much time in churches anyway.
I was just curious to know, because I had friends that have gone to Laos, and I was just wondering if the society was like a closed society to the gospel, if the country was like closed, were they receptive? How did that even go? Like how? I mean, I just think of like my friends in particular here that, you know, just the idea of presenting the gospel to somebody that I've known for such a long time, like comfort and things like that. It kind of, for me at least, makes it kind of tough to present the gospel to people I know that don't believe. How was that for you guys?
Again, in my training, our training was that the whole world wants to hear the gospel. And I went over to Thailand, and that was pretty
shocking.
Shocking. That's a shocking. Okay, this is why. You know, you go into Bangkok, and you start sharing with people, and they say, okay, I've heard that before. Let's go on to something else. And so you can share a lot of places. You can even go to the schools and share about Christ. But for finding people who are really wanting to hear, I didn't see it. Not necessarily it doesn't happen in other parts of the world. It does. But Thailand and Laos and, I don't know about Cambodia, but that part of the world, there's a very, very small number of people who are willing to hear the gospel and to believe. But those who do, you see a big difference. It's God all the way. I mean, those people are saying, tell me about it, you know. And that's, again, where I tell people, I didn't go over to Thailand to do anything. I went to see God at work.
Yeah, they weren't open at all. And it's so not open in Thailand. You'll hear more that it is, sort of. But if you share the gospel real quick, if God's doing a work, fine. But to them, tuk satana di munkan, and that, you'll hear that, you'll learn that phrase first. That's why I can say that so well. Every religion is good the same. So I'll be happy to listen to your religion, but I can never accept it. And it's so to the extent, when we left there in 2004, there was an article written by a Thai fellow, and he said, he's Thai, and he says, what is it with these Thai people? Who has changed? Who has brought us hospitals? Who has helped all these AIDS victims? Who helped the leprosy? That was what was big when we went. Leprosy victims and TB people. Who has done all this magnificent stuff? And what is it about us that we still don't like their message? That's when you've got to know your people's worldviews. And it takes you a whole lot. You can read books about it and do it. Read everything you can about where you're going. You probably still won't know it. And they don't really know they have one. So it's very... that first 10 years, we saw all of our friends die, and it's death in the raw. When they died, they died right. I went up on the porch, and the man's dead. I go, this is different than my worldview, yes. And I was trying to determine if he was or he wasn't. And then you're just wrapped in a mat, and you're thrown in a hole. And these, of course, became our friends, and to watch that. So when people wanted a DVD, I'm going, I can't even get my mind wrapped around, we lost this guy. And, Lord, we know you loved him, but we did ask that a few times. Lord, where are you in this place? And he was there, and he is there. We didn't realize the warfare we were in, and we didn't realize, it's not that, I want to say that kind of praying, but it is. We just didn't realize the battle we were in, and we were going to learn it the hard way. So, yeah, we weren't open, and so we were delighted when the first girl, I taught her in secret. And we were only writing lessons to tell you in case any of you ever wanted to hear, and we were wondering if any of you ever would. But we just did the lessons starting in Genesis. No background for these people. We'd studied language and culture. We could have been anthropologists. That doesn't open your heart. The word does, but even that just spitting at you doesn't. You got to love a long time, and you're not even sure you're doing that very well, and they'll tell you you're not. And and just be ready. But she helped me with the lessons. She became the first believer at 14, and today she and her husband are dynamic. They're the two that are the evangelists for the tribe, and they're loving it. But they wrote, not very long ago and said, Badi and Isandi, that was their names out there, they're still not any more open yet. Keep praying.
The question is, would you want to go to kids first since they haven't been quite as enculturated? Is it easier to reach them?
That's a great idea if it'll work. Here's what happened. The tribe we were in is the Bride Tribe of Thailand. They had a belief that if you listen to the word of God, you'll get sick and die. The Buddhist, they're animists, they're not Buddhists, had come in and told them that. We began to share the word in 1981. We'd got there in 79. Our coworker was better than us. He'd grown up in Sudan. So he got the language. We began to share the word in our tribe, and the vice headman dropped dead the night we shared. Dropped dead. It wasn't only get sick and die, he died. We could not touch their children. Their children would get sick and they would come to us and say, did you talk to them about your religion? You do not talk to our kids. We could not talk to their kids until we had been there 17 years. And the believer that had become after 10 years had some relatives, and she got married, and we couldn't talk to her kids, obviously, because it was just a baby, but we were able to talk to then for the first time some relatives. So it is a good way to go if you can do it we couldn't.
Well, thank you guys for coming out and answering questions for us, giving us your thoughts.